Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sweeney Murdy. He's Ed Coleman. And usually we're giving you Yankees and Mets reports on the radio. And, well, there's not a lot to actually report on, obviously, as we all try and stay safe and do our part. So we thought we'd get together and kind of talk to you about what we're doing and maybe what you can expect. All of your questions we're talking about with baseball, things like that. And just some talk. Me and Eddie, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fine, Sweeney. At least I'm trying to keep it up on this end. This is kind of weird. I was thinking today, April 1st, well, we'd be, three or four games into the baseball season at this point. Opening day has gone by. Missed getting back to Florida. It's been a little strange. It's it's funny. On opening day, the weather was beautiful here in New York. You guys would have opened in Baltimore. Yeah. I think it was probably nice down there as well, too. But, temperatures were in the 60s, and it usually works that way. You know, you fret for a snowstorm and at the end of March or beginning of April, but it works out pretty well. But it would have been nice to see opening day. I don't know when we're going to see that. That's unfortunate.
Isn't it? Yeah, I mean, and listen, I hope we're all doing our part. We're all, everything you watch on TV, people are working from their homes, people in TV news, and I know at the radio station, a lot of people are working from home, keeping everything to a minimum and out and around town. Everyone's trying to do their part. You stay home, you stay safe, and wash hands and all that, and just keep reminding everybody. But, you know, we all still want to know when we're getting back to normal. And I know, you know, the people that you talk to are probably asking the same things the people I talk to. They want to know when we're going to play and what kind of season it's going to be. And there are just too many unanswered questions right now. I think we're just open to all possibilities. And I think when this first started, the idea was, okay, let's figure out what the plans are going to be if there's a full season, if there's a 140-game season, if there's a 120-game season, and kind of work your way down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of still where we are, trying to figure out, okay, if and when this happens, what are your different ideas? And I think some of the things we've seen and talked to people about, Eddie, is that it's going to have to get a little creative, and we shouldn't think of this like a regular baseball season. This is just going to be whatever the 2020 season is, and then hopefully there's something else more regular behind it.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to get very creative. And I see, you know, listen, there are obviously going to be a lot of problems that you encounter. You know, I texted you yesterday when the news about Toronto came down, where they put a ban on public events. Now, the mayor later said, you know, he wasn't talking specifically about baseball, but basically they put a ban till June 30th.
Yeah, it's a long time.
But here's a question that I have, and I don't know, maybe you've heard people talk about this. I haven't. It's easy to say, hey, you know, you've got a 50,000, 60,000 seat stadium or less or thereabouts. You know, you can't have crowds and you might be playing before empty stadiums. But, I mean, think about this. There are 30 guys, upwards of 30 guys on a baseball team,
yep.
Right? There's another 10, 12 thereabouts on a coaching staff, something like that, that you throw in with both teams. You've got some other personnel around. You've got broadcast crews. I would imagine that you're going to have to factor that in. If you don't have crowds, you're going to have to either have these games on radio or TV, yep, so people can see. So you're talking probably upwards of 100 people, you know, in a stadium.
Yeah.
And the last time I looked, there are 54 outs in a game, supposedly, maybe 51. But you've, for every one of those outs, you've got a batter, a catcher, and an umpire, and there's no social distancing right there.
Right.
No, 3. So how does that all work? How does that factor in? Do you have to make sure that everyone who's in that stadium is COVID-free? Do they all have to be tested? Do you have to be tested constantly? These are things that pop into my head. I don't know if people have talked about that a lot, but how does that work?
I think one of the things that I saw Andy McCullough wrote in The Athletic, one of the things was, okay, let's say you start the season and then a player on a team tests positive. Right. What do? You just quarantine that team for 2 weeks and take them out of the schedule. There's all kinds of different ramifications there. The thing I was thinking about, kind of along the lines of what you just mentioned, Ed, and this has been floating around in my head for about a week now, you've got some hot spots like New York, like Seattle, like the Bay Area, all have Major League Baseball teams. If you are a Major League Baseball team, you have a traveling party like you just talked about. Let's just even, you know, drop it down a little bit and be conservative. Let's say your traveling party is about 50 people, including players and coaches and medical staff, whatever. You want to add in broadcast, whatever. But let's just say, okay, 75 people on a traveling party that have to stay in a hotel in that city. If you are another team right now and I tell you that you're going to come to New York City and stay in your Times Square hotel right now, and you've got to stay there for 3 or 4 days and play games. I mean, Times Square is a ghost town. If you're watching, you know, Good Morning America or any of these other shows, you're going to tell me that anybody's going to be jumping at the chance to go stay in these hotels in any of these cities right now to play baseball games? I know I wouldn't feel real comfortable going on any of those trips.
Yeah, no, I'm with you 100%. You know, listen, New York, when you look at New York right now and the situation that we're in, I don't know when you can clear for getting teams in here and having these teams, the Yankees and Mets, play home games at this point in time. You know, here's another thing you throw in as well, too. The Mets play, say, the Philadelphia Phillies at home for a 3-game series. After that, they're scheduled to fly to Atlanta. And Atlanta, as you said, all of a sudden becomes a hotspot.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what do you do? Do you get Atlanta to get on a plane to come to New York? Do you flip the series? Do you wipe out the series? There's so many things that you don't know at this point in time. I mean, you can settle down and say, okay, we're going to play 100 games. That's it. And, you know, we'll try to work that in, pick it up at a point, and then maybe work in some of the games that we missed before. And that's great to have a schedule like that. But there are so many things that can pop up, as you said. And I think we're seeing that now. You know, New Orleans, Chicago, other cities, and even some of the rural areas are cropping up now, too. How long does that last? Does it last into the fall? There are a million questions to ask, and it's really very hard. I don't envy anybody who's trying to put this together and trying to figure it out.
And it doesn't make it equal either, because because different parts of the countries are affected different ways. One area might say, okay, we're good to have a public event on, say, you know, June 15th, and another might not be ready until August 1st, you know, which really it's for the first time, it's really starting to put into question a legitimate question of, are they really going to play at all? And I know that's a question nobody wants to have asked, but the idea here is that you're trying to get so many different moving pieces into one entity, which, you know, Major League Baseball always is. You fit the schedule in and everybody goes around, but nothing is normal and nothing is equal now in any of these places. So, and even the idea, I know Joel Sherman wrote about the idea of, you know, minor league teams are going to be affected here, and every different organization is going to have differences in their minor league ability and the different ordinances in those smaller towns and cities. So everything about this tells me that, you know, I don't think we're going to see anything close to a normal schedule. I know that's, again, everything is really, really premature. But the more I think about it, what would seem to make the most sense is at some point we get through this, have some sort of tournament-style setting that is unique to 2020, and we get some product that's probably TV-only for the most part, and then try to figure out, okay, are we going to be really beyond this by the time we get to a normal season? Because the other thing to remember here, Eddie, as much as people want to talk about stretching this into October and into November, you're then affecting next season's preparation, because the you know, you can't physically recover in time to put together a full, you know, 9-month regular season next year if we're all ready to go then.
Yeah, I think that's a point. That's a great point, Swinney, because I think that's something a lot of people haven't even thought about. You're trying to get this season in a truncated version any which way you can. But, you know, if you're playing neutral site games, you know, as some people have said, hey, you can get the whole schedule in. We can play neutral site games and go back to the spring training facilities or use domes, et cetera, and play in the December. But, you know, that, yeah, it does. It gives you what, a month and a half off, and then you're in training again to go. I mean, it is crazy. The minor league point is a valid one too, because injuries happen. We know that. Right. I don't care what the rosters are on the major league level. They were supposed to be 26. They're going to be 29 the first month. Maybe they'll be 30. But injuries are going to happen, and maybe particularly to pitchers. So what do you do with the guys that you need in arrears, you know, to call up when people do get hurt and do get injured? Where are they? Is there minor league baseball? Is there a camp somewhere where these guys can work out? It's really hard to factor all this stuff in and to try to piece it all together. It's like a puzzle that you're trying to – a lot of people are trying to put together during this thing, and some get it quicker than others. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I guess the idea is we're all trying to get something together without really thinking about this idea that maybe this just goes away and you just kind of have to start over. And nobody wants that for lots of obvious reasons. But even just from the business standpoint of it, between the, let's just, you know, for the teams that we cover, the Mets and the Yankees, there are so many factors here because the players have agreed and the teams have agreed that they're going to get service time. Now, you know, one side of this is what the Red Sox are dealing with. The Red Sox and the Dodgers traded players for Mookie Betts. He might not play a single game for them, but they don't get to say, we want our players back. I mean, you know, the deal's the deal, I guess. And I guess there's probably no recourse. They gave away pretty good prospects to get this guy, and they might not get to see him play at all. But locally, you know, you and I were just talking before this, you got players like Pete Alonso ready to, you know, he's in a prime year physically. And even if we get to the point where we're playing again, you can't replace this year at this age for any of these players, let alone the guys who are in their prime, who are being paid, you know, really team friendly when you're pre-ARB like Alonso is, or even if you're just getting into ARB like Aaron Judge is, you're now a year close in a free agency. You're losing a lot from a business. I know, and everybody is, but you're losing lots from a business sense for these two teams, just like everybody else.
Yeah, and even on the competition level, look at the two pitchers who are, you know, front and center during this season: Jacob DeGrom for the Mets, Garrett Cole for the Yankees. Two guys in the prime of their careers right now, the way they're pitching, certainly. And, you know, how does that work out? You have two guys that you look forward to putting up 30, 32 starts, 33 starts, and maybe the postseason as well. What kind of seasons did they have? It's very frustrating. It's very frustrating, I'm sure, for them and for all who love baseball and all who want to see it.
And I know I'm not the only one who made this point, but I guess in some way it's similar to watching some of the great stars of the 1940s lose time for World War II, or you know, Ted Williams served in two different wars and lost prime years of his career. So it's not entirely unique. It's happened before, but it hasn't happened in, you know, a couple of generations where we've had to think about the idea of, and back then, you know, it's not like life shut down altogether. It was just, okay, these players and ordinary citizens of all kinds had to go fight a war. The rest of society and life happened in a different way. This is, again, this is entirely unique, the way we're trying to deal with this.
Yeah. Speaking of pitching and the Mets and the Yankees, they both took a serious blow in the offseason. Noah Syndergaard going down with Tommy John surgery, Luis Severino going down with Tommy John surgery. And I think, you know, just looking at it from afar, the Yankees are probably a little bit better set to overcome that than the Mets. And I'm not saying the Mets can't overcome it, but to me it's a blow simply because, you know, last year I think people maybe lost sight of the fact that with the brilliance of Jacob DeGrom, Zach Wheeler was probably a 1A, certainly down the stretch for the Mets. He's now in Philadelphia with Joe Girardi, an old friend of yours and ours, for that matter. But we'll see how that works out. But I think that everyone felt that Noah Syndergaard was going to be that 1A this year for the Mets, and he looked that way. That's what was so stunning to us in when this cropped up in spring training or after spring training. We were all stunned because he had been fine, had never complained about anything. We never asked about anything because there was no reason to ask about anything. He was pitching great down there. It happens. But, their depth will be tested, and depth could be a very important thing in a truncated season. I think it's going to be.
For sure.
They have guys like Walker Lockett, Erasmo Ramirez, a young David Peterson who really hasn't pitched above double A, but, and maybe there's a trade deadline. Maybe there are trades. I have no idea at this point in time. We don't know, but I don't know if they're as set to me anyway, as the Yankees might be as well. You can't lose those guys. That's going to hurt. Obviously both of them are, very talented, but you'd like to be, a little bit more set when those things happen. I think the Yankees might be in a better spot than the Mets.
I think the Yankees felt that they were ready to cover it at the beginning of a season, at the beginning of whatever 162-game season was going to look like, and that they had the depth to cover it. But, I mean, you know how the Yankees operate. There's always going to be eyes on the trade market whenever that happens. And now, here's another really a question as to what happens if you put some sort of a season into place. What kind of a trade deadline is there going to be, and can you start working on it now? I know there's a roster freeze coming here. If it isn't already under place, I think the way they were ratifying the agreement, things like that, they were going to be able to option players off the major league roster onto their minor league rosters, but no other activity after that point. But at some point, if you figure out, let's just say by like a month from now, we figure out, okay, we've flattened the curve. There's some sort of light at the end of the tunnel as far as saying, okay, can you play baseball this year? What kind of season is going to be? How are teams going to start, taking inventory of what they have, what they need? And that's going to change once they start working out. But would it be worth it for a team to start thinking about a trade and making a trade now? Which, on the calendar would then be May or June as opposed to April, even though the season hasn't started. So many weird itinerations of this that you just, have to wrap your head around. I don't really know how to figure that part out. But I know I spoke to a couple of team execs last week, and they're not really concentrating on any of that. Right now, all they're doing is they're doing some internal stuff. They're doing a lot of video analysis of their own guys and maybe some guys from other teams to have reports. But it's not like people are talking about, okay, let's make this trade or that trade. You're still pretty far away from this. But I guess even the team executives are kind of doing what we're doing. You're holed up in your place and you're taking inventory of what you have and just kind of preparing, but you're not really ready to move quite forward yet.
Yeah, well, you brought up something that I've thought about a lot when you said when teams begin working out. How does that work? I can't even get beyond that. Okay, now everyone, I think, assumes, all right, well, they'll go back to Florida or Arizona and go to the spring training facilities and work out for a couple of weeks or so. Well, Florida just passed something where, I think it's Hillsborough County where you guys are, other counties, at least four counties or whatever. There's no mass meetings. You can't get together. Yep. It makes no sense to do it unless you can get all the teams back there to play some games. Do you work out at home? The weather would be nicer, obviously, here in New York and the northern cities and that. But who do you play if you're doing it? You play amongst yourselves. There's all kinds of things to consider. How much of a ramp up do you need? Is it at this stage, by the time they get around to that, you're probably only looking at a couple of weeks. So that's why the expanded rosters, so you don't burn out your pitching staff and your bullpen, et cetera. But there are so many things that you have to work out on that end. That's before the season even begins. So I haven't even got beyond that point at this stage.
One of the points of comparison, and you and I have both some different perspectives on it, and I'm curious to hear yours. The 1981 season, where the strike interrupted the 81 season, it was around June 10th or 11th, and they resumed the season 2 months later. There was about a 9 or 10 day spring training type of situation. They played the All-Star game in Cleveland and then had a second half of the season, And it was more or less a normal baseball season with a 2 month vacation. But I was 10. I turned 11 that summer during the strike, and I was baseball crazy. You know, I grew up in Pennsylvania as a Phillies fan. Well, 1980, the Phillies won the World Series. I'm 10, almost 11 years old. The Phillies are the defending world champs, and the season halts. Season just comes to a stop, and all you're left to do is, it's summer vacation, first of all, because the school's just ended, and all you're left to do is trade baseball cards with your buddies and hope that baseball games continue again. I guess you were probably working in Boston during the 81 strike, right?
I was, definitely. I wasn't covering baseball, so I guess I'm at a disadvantage in that regard. But when I look back at the stoppages, you know, 81 and 94 are the ones that really, you know, pop up. And I remember, I'll take 94 first. That hurt the game. It hurt the people because you never got back to it. I mean, it stopped and it stopped mm-hmm. cold. And plus, there was a great story that year in the Montreal Expos. The Yankees were great. And I think everyone was looking forward to a Yankees Expos World Series, which would have been fabulous. But I think that obviously hurt more. 81, I do remember that people weren't as angry, whatever, because they did, you know, get back to playing baseball. Yeah. It was a weird season, to say mm-hmm. the least, but they did come back to playing. They forgave easier or easily, to me, at least in my mind, from what I remember, going back that far. That's how many years ago is that?
That's
like 40 years ago.
Yeah, 39 years ago now. Yeah,
40 years ago. It's a long time going back. But I do remember the anger was not as bad. They were upset because, you know, that's not supposed to happen. This is baseball, sports. You know, this is the toy department, okay, at that point in time. But it was after, you know, the Mezzo Smith things in the 70s, et cetera. But I do remember it being a very weird time, but they forgave easier, certainly, than they did in 1994.
Yeah, they didn't cancel a World Series. You know, at least you got a playoffs, you got a World Series, and it was odd. You know, the Reds won more games than any other team, but didn't make the playoffs because they didn't have the best record in either half.
Right.
I think the Cy Young Award winners that year won 13 and 14 games. You know, it was just a little odd with the statistical totals. I think he had one player at 30 home runs. It was Mike Schmidt.
Well, think about that. 13, 14 games. That's actually more than Jacob DeGrom won in the last couple of years.
Yeah, that's right.
Talk about a changing game.
you know, my last, and I was talking about this someone the other day because it just jogged my memory. My lasting memory of around that strike deadline, it was June 10th, 11th, around there, the Phillies were playing the Astros, and Pete Rose needed two hits to pass Stan Musial for the all-time National League hits record. It was 36-30. Well, the last game before the strike, it's Phillies-Astros. Nolan Ryan is pitching for Houston, and Rose needs two hits. He gets a single his first time up, and he ties the record. And then he faces Ryan three more times. Ryan strikes him out the next three times. Some of those buckling curveballs, obviously Ryan fastball. And I think the third time, which Rose knew was going to be his last chance for who knows how long to pass Stan Musial, he slammed his bat down really hard. And, you know, the anger was there, the competitive fire. And he had to wait 2 months to pass Stan Musial's record. And I remember vividly, being locked into that, and you know, as an almost 11-year-old, you're locked into your home team, you're locked into learning statistics and history at that point of who these guys are and what the numbers mean, and all that stuff. I have that image of watching Pete strike out trying to break that record.
That's funny. You know, speaking of stoppages, funny story. 1994, the Mets were in Philadelphia. When the season came to an abrupt end, Veterans Stadium. This is, you know,
Citizens Bank.
Yeah, Citizens Bank Park down in Philly. But I remember after the game, the team went back to the hotel because people were, you know, they were leaving the next day. And it was a night game. Everyone was crammed into the bar after the game, and the umpires were there too as well. And it was kind of it was a crazy night to say the least, you know, because everyone knew baseball was ending at that point in time and probably wasn't coming back. But my lasting memory of that night was as I'm leaving the bar, Joe West was part of the umpire Joe West came up to me and handed me a CD of his, his country music, which I still have.
Do you really? Okay. Wow. Hey, at least you didn't say 8-track, you know?
Yeah, I know. I still have that tucked away. And it might have been a cassette. I can't remember. I'd say CD, but probably was a cassette at that point in time. But yeah, he says, hey, you know, you'll have some time. Listen to this. So that was my lasting memory of that last night of the 1994 season.
You mentioned umpires. The last game in Florida before spring training was canceled, the umpires were running off the field, and we were waiting to talk to Aaron Boone. Angel Hernandez was the home plate umpire, right? And Angel walks past the group of us and just says, "See you in June," and keeps running. And we're like, "What's Angel talking about?" And all this, like, he never gets anything right. And he might have undersold this now. I got to give Angel some props all of a sudden, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he knew what was going on. You and I kind of reminisce a little bit. I think that's what we're all doing right now. It's like there are two things that we're kind of going back to as sports fans to try and recreate these things. One, watching sports movies, you know, and I mean, we all have our favorites. And, you know, I watched Miracle twice in 3 days after coming home from Florida. I've watched Hoosiers. I watched Secretariat with my family the other night. Fun movie with Diane Lane as the owner of Secretariat and telling that story. But the other thing we're doing is watching old games. And you got a chance to watch a little bit the night before Howie and Fran Healy's call was played on the Mike Piazza home run, the first game after 9/11. What were your thoughts watching that again?
Yeah, you know, it took me back, obviously, because the Mets had they had to go back to Pittsburgh. The Mets were in Pittsburgh when 9/11 happened, and it took a couple of days to get home. I remember we were sheltered in place at the time, but did make it back, I think, the next day or the next night was by the time we had gotten home, but had to go back to Pittsburgh to play and open up there. And I remember those games very vividly, playing in Pittsburgh, and that was tough to do. I don't think anybody felt right. It was just hard at that point in time. I don't think that anybody felt that the country was ready for it, but I think they were. They needed a diversion, and it took a while for that to sink in for the players. But I don't think it truly sank in until the Mets got back to New York and played in New York, and played that game. And I was struck by a couple of things. I mean, you know, Piazza always had a knack for the moment.
Yeah.
You know, Mike was just that way. You know, that's the guy you wanted up at that point in time. He usually came through. He did in a huge way in that. But I was struck by a couple of things that Steve Carsey was on the mound, of course.
Yeah. New Yorker, native New Yorker.
Yeah, native New Yorker who, you know, has, I think, embraced that over the years.
Totally has.
But I'd forgotten how angry he was at the pitch to Edgardo Alfonso, who he lost to a walk right before the Piazza home run. And he was upset. There was no question about it. Ball four was ball four, but it was, you know, pitches before. But the other thing was, and I'd forgotten about this, that Davey Martinez, the Washington Nationals manager, he had pinch hit the inning before and had gone in to play first base. I had totally forgotten about that. It was actually great to see him. He's a great guy. Obviously, tremendous season this year. Yep. I know Mets fans don't want to hear that, but, you know, he's – Yeah, came back, had the heart problem, came back during the season. It was great to see him there at first base. And then, of course, the Piazza home run, which was absolutely clocked. And you know what it reminded me of a little bit, talk about a Mets-Yankees flashback, was Piazza's last out in the
2000 World Series.
2000 World Series, because he hit that, I thought, on the screws, as they say. And it was a damp night. It was, you know, it's October. And I think a lot of people in the building at Shea at that time felt it was gone. It was a Piazza home run, but it wasn't. Bernie settled under it, got the out, and the Yankees had the win in the World Series.
It's funny, if you watch that replay again, you see Mariano Rivera shudder as Piazza makes contact. It's like it was loud. It was, you know, it caught him off guard. You're right. Everybody thought it was gone, and then all of a sudden, it just kind of died there in left center. I'm curious about a couple of things about the post 9/11 home run. You know, you were in the building, obviously. So
yes,
I don't. Last night, I was struck by a couple of things listening to Howie's call. Howie was doing the TV call at the time.
Right.
And he hit so many things on the screws in that moment that, you know, 19 years later, you're like, how could he have known then what it would all mean now? Like, how he painted everything perfectly, what that moment meant in the moment, not in hindsight. And that really struck me. I don't know how many times you've had a chance to hear that call since you were obviously there when it happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think he nailed it that time. But Howie is very good at in the moment, at nailing the moment, and he did. There's no question about it. I think that that was the guy. I always remember Bobby Cox saying this before, and Bobby hated to lose. I mean, Bobby, if anyone hated to lose, it was Bobby Cox, and he said, hey, the right team won. There's no question. That was the night we had a lead at 2-1. But you know, I thought it might evaporate and go, and I didn't really care whether it evaporated or went, but you know, how he did, he nailed it, absolutely, because it meant so much for the city at that point in time. It was a raucous crowd that night because there was so many things going on. Yeah. Liza Minnelli, Mark Anthony, et cetera. I remember, Chipper Jones, well, I guess was, I think, on SportsCenter last night, but I didn't get to see it. But I remember Chipper talking about it one time. He's playing left field. He wasn't playing third base. He was playing left field that night. But he was out there with the 21-gun salute and when they before they opened up the game. And he said that he had told me that he would go out every inning and pick up the spent cartridges. And he still has the spent cartridges from the 21-gun salute. He would put them in his back pocket. And, you know, that's
amazing.
It is amazing. And Chipper always said it's for the career that he had, and a guy who hated New York, he used to come to New York. And I mean, he loved playing at Shea because, you know, he had great success there, but he hated coming to New York early in his career because he was shy. He was, kind of a country bumpkin kind of kid and was afraid to go out of New York. He was just afraid of New York. He'd get to his hotel room in New York, stay there, take the bus to the game, go back, stay in the game. This was early in his career. Afterwards, he said all the time, he says, I missed in New York. It kills me now how much I love walking around the city and seeing the people. He says, I just understand it better. And it was funny to me, you know, in talking to him when he was, you know, recounting all that, he said that game is probably above and beyond any game that I can remember. And you know, I don't think he even had a great game. You know, he had a hit that put them ahead, but at the same time, you know, he's had great moments during the course of his career. But that was, you know, just the moment itself is just etched in his memory, and I think it's probably there for all of us.
I've heard Ken Singleton tell me the same thing about the game the Yankees played after Thurman Munson's funeral. That Bobby Cox told you, you know, like, listen, if we're going to lose, you know, this is the game that it's okay to lose because of what it meant in the moment. But I'm kind of struck by the environment of that game that we watched last night, because that's going to be an environment we're going to want to see in every ballpark whenever fans are allowed to come in and there's a game that means something. The thing that I recall about that game is the pregame ceremony, Bobby Valentine was doing what Bobby does really well. He was pumping everybody up, and he was treating it as a festive moment, not a sad one. I remember whatever the bands were playing and things like that, and Bobby was marching along and bopping along and doing his very best to show everybody, hey, we're back. It's okay. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to be happy now, to be back. And I think that's kind of what my memory is of that pregame. And it's kind of what sticks with me. Like, we should remember that, because that's what we want to see at some point in the future.
Yeah, and I think Piazza put the exclamation point on the night, obviously. You know, listen, if the Mets had come back to win in some way, shape, or form, it would have been great, okay? If it was a great game and Atlanta won, all right, I guess you remember that. You're back to playing baseball. But Piazza and the way that New York felt about Mike Piazza, I think, you know, obviously capped it, put an exclamation point on it. That's what made it so special, no question about it. But, you know, as you were talking, Sweeney, I remembered something that I had heard last night from Lester Holt as I'm watching the NBC Nightly News. And, you know, he said that he's talking about the deaths in New York, the deaths nationwide, but in particular, the deaths in New York. And that he said we have surpassed the deaths of 9/11.
Wow.
You know, it struck me, you know, that, you know, we're in a body count at this point in time. And, yeah. And hopefully, you know, we've heard the numbers. We've all heard the numbers. Yeah. And hopefully we can keep it down and come in way under those numbers. But it just struck me last night, you know, going back to that. And then later on, you know, catching some of the 9/11 game again with Piazza.
Yeah, and you're right. We all have to keep doing our part. And as much as it, you know, it's out of our routine and feels like normal, it doesn't feel like normal. It feels like forever. We just got to keep doing this. Stay home, stay away from everybody, and do your best to, you know, wash your hands and do what you got to do to stay away and stay safe.
You know, yeah, the difference is, I guess, this year, and I agree with you. I think, you know, you need a celebratory mood in a sense when baseball does come back and you can start to get back to normal, because that's what it was. Then I think during the 9/11 time, it was, you know, basically trying to show the enemy, hey, you're not going to change our way of life. All right. I don't care what you do. You're not going to change our way of life. This, you know, to me is going to be different because chances are I don't know if there are going to be any crowds when we do start playing baseball, when and if. Hopefully there's no if, that it's when. And I do think we will play baseball, but there won't be any crowds. It'll be different. It'll be harder for the players maybe to acclimate themselves to that too. They're not used to this. I don't care what they say. You know, you can think back to playing high school games and, you know, in sparse crowds or just your family and your closest friends there, but it's different. They're used to that. And everybody talks about the energy when I get on the mound. You know, it's hard to play these games during exhibition season. It's just not there. That's going to be different.
Gonna have to drum it up, absolutely. And other classic games are going to be aired, and we're seeing on our station tonight, Wednesday night, as you and I are talking. I don't know when people are actually going to be listening to this, but as you and I are speaking on Wednesday night, we're going to air the Subway Series game from 2009 that ended on Luis Castillo's dropped pop up. Another one of the more memorable games that you and I have been to. I know that one didn't, you know, I don't think we were joking earlier. Mark Feinsand texted Steve Carsey last night during this game to find out if he was watching. And Carsey wrote back, "No, I know how it ends." As good a sport as he is, you know, he didn't really see the need to put himself through that one again. I don't, you know, are you going to text Luis Castillo tonight, see if he's listening to our broadcast and see if he's paying attention to that one?
No, I don't think so. You know, I appreciated Luis a lot, though. You know, that was a tough night for him. I'll tell you what, he answered every question. He stood there and answered every question, and they came in waves.
Yes.
The Subway Series, you know, the media, you know, you don't get it to answer it just once. You get to answer it 12, 13 times as people come up to you. And I always appreciated that about Luis. One other thing I always remember about Luis Castillo, when they lost, it was, it was another year. It was a crucial game that they lost. But he took things hard. He was a baseball player.
Yeah,
he was a tough guy. I think a very good player. But you know, it struck me how much it resonated with him, and how much that hurt him. But you know, listen, he wore it well, and I always appreciate that in a player. I think when the good times are there, you can, you know, do all the celebrating you want and talk all you want and take all the accolades. But you also have to be there during the tough times. And he was one guy that I always appreciated, was always there for that.
Yeah, it is a tough thing for a player. And you always appreciate when they're able to go through that with their head held high. One of the stories that, you know, I've been recounting a bunch of different stories online. And one of them this week was from the day after this game. And I don't know if you were with me or not. I was standing in the Yankees clubhouse. And I saw Yogi Berra walk in, and he always walked in the back over by Derek Jeter's locker. And, you know, he'd show up like once a homestand, so it wasn't unusual to see him. But he showed up the day after this game. And I walked over to him, and I said, "Yogi, did you see the end of that game last night? What'd you think?" And he jumped at me as if he'd been waiting all day for someone to ask him this. He grabs me by the arm. He has that little twinkle in his eye, and he says, it ain't over till it's over. Oh, it was fantastic. He was waiting all day to spring that on him.
Yeah, absolutely. You that perfect time for him to lay that one. I loved Yogi. I'll tell you what. I just I love being around him. I wasn't around him enough. You probably were around him a lot more. But I did see him from time to time early in my career when I was down here in New York. Mm-hmm. I'd get to see him, and I just loved every boy. He was tremendous. It always struck me too that I'd look from afar and I'd say, this is one of the greatest catchers in the game of baseball.
Absolutely. I still remember watching him walk across, because the coaches and stuff, they shower up like the players do, and they walk to their dressing rooms. And I remember one point watching Yogi, like, in just a towel, dotter across the clubhouse. And Jabba Chamberlain is looking at him, and I go, yep. One of the greatest players of all time. He's like 4'10".
One of the greatest clutch players. One of the nicest people you're ever going to meet in your life. I remember having a conversation with younger guys, younger than me. I'll put it that way, okay, as I get older by the day. But we were talking about greatest catchers of all time. And I think, Johnny Bench probably comes out and leaps to the top right away with most people, even younger people. But, I mentioned Yogi Berra. A lot of people, looked at me like, Yogi Berra? I said, yeah. I said, Yogi Berra. I said, go look at the numbers. Go do some reading, Yogi Berra.
Speaking of reading, it's probably a good time to give a plug to, I'm just reading this now. There's a book that comes out, I believe it's sometime in April. John Pessa wrote a biography of Yogi, and that's due out. It's an exhaustive biography. The kind that you usually see after people are kind of out of public spotlight for a while, or unfortunately after they've passed. And it's a really good look at him. I'm just kind of starting that now. And as you're looking for things to do and read, that's going to be a good book. And we're looking for things to watch, too. And you have finished something that I'm kind of in the middle of. Tiger King is taking us all by storm, and you've gotten to the end of that, huh?
It's amazing how social media, controls our lives these days, because everyone has watched this. It's just, it's like wildfire. It's gone through. Yes, I have finished. I'm not a binger. Okay. I'll admit straight up. I long for the days, and I tell you, my kids look at me like, what are you, crazy? How old are you? You tell us you're old, but how old are you? But I long for the days of Breaking Bad, which is always my all-time favorite, which I go back to. But, the anticipation of, week after week, what's it going to be? As you got closer to the day, saying, okay, what's Walter White going to do? This? How's he going to get out of this each week? But now you can sit there and, reel through everything. But yes, we watched The Tiger King in 2 days. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know where you are.
I do. They're a bunch of crackpots. Holy cow. God. These guys are insane.
It's humble. I don't know how many people this takes the cake as far as watching anything, any movie, series, whatever, of people with missing teeth. Okay. That's the principles in it. The people who go to the zoo to watch this thing. But this guy is, Joe Exotic is absolutely off his rockers. Now I'm not going to, if somebody hasn't watch the whole thing, I'm not going to spoil it at this point in time, but it's I got a kick out of Shaq is takes one of the episodes. He's there because he's a big cat, big fan of big cats. He doesn't have them, but he loves them, loves tigers in particular. And he was there 3 or 4 times, but he had to walk that back afterwards because it looked like during one of the segments that Shaq was a close friend, et cetera. So he says, "Whoa, wait a minute." He says that boy is crazy.
We all agree they're crazy. And listen, if I'm 7'2" and 400 pounds, maybe I wouldn't be as afraid of big cats, but I think you're all kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, there's no question. It's wild. I mean, there are so many layers to that. It's fascinating. You can't, when you start, you really can't. If you're going to binge something, that's probably something to binge because you can't take your eyes off it, and you can't forget what is going on during this thing. It's absolutely nuts.
It's insane. We're going to be on to the, I think we're going to finish it probably later today, and then it's going to be on to the next thing. You got some favorite movies you've been watching? What are some of the things you like to watch over and over?
Well, I did watch Hoosiers the other night because that popped up. That you mentioned that before. Miracle is always one of my favorites. That's a go-to movie for me. I could watch the scene again.
Yes. Yeah. Again. Uh-huh. Yep.
Again, when they're on the ice after they've had the clunker of a game, and he's got them at practice, and they're still joking around. Again, that's enough. You know, I can't remember who says to Kurt Russell at the time. That's enough. No. Yeah. Again, I could watch that scene forever. I love the movie. It's a tremendous.
I do too. Yeah, it's fantastic. I'll give myself a plug. I got to talk to the producer of the movie, Mark Chardy, who was actually a pitcher with the Brewers in 1987.
Okay.
He's made Miracle. He's made The Rookie. He's made Secretariat, Million Dollar Arm, very successful career in Hollywood. I had him on a podcast, so you can go back and listen to that, 30 with Murdy. And I got the writer of Hoosiers, Angelo Pizzo. And we talked about that and all kinds of opening up little secrets about that movie, because it's probably one of my three or four favorite movies, period, let alone sports movies. I had him on a podcast too, so that's an interesting thing to go back and listen to.
I can make it.
Yeah, you got some time. I'll make it.
I'll make it.
Got two Jimmy lines in the whole movie.
I know. I'll make it. You know what I've found myself doing, just with the cable that you have, I actually taped a couple of movies that I had seen before, kind of under the radar movies and you forget about. Mm-hmm. I just taped a movie called Fallen, which was Denzel Washington. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, vaguely.
But it's eerily ironic to kind of what's going on with COVID-19. It's not a contagion movie, but it has something to do with touch. It's interesting to watch. It's called Fallen. John Goodman is in it.
Okay.
Denzel Washington. And I also just taped Jackie Brown. I don't know if you remember
I've never seen it. No, I know what it is, though. Yeah.
Those are movies that I've watched, and they kind of stick in your head, but you've forgotten about them totally, but all of a sudden they come around. So I've taped them. I haven't watched them yet, but I find it's a good time to do that. Maybe go back and get some hidden nuggets that you liked or you heard about that you hadn't watched or have watched.
I can tell you that my wife and I were ahead of the curve on Outbreak. We watched that before everything started closing down. We went to watch that again. And I watched Patrick Dempsey bring the monkey back from wherever. Yep. And that's another one that's very popular right now for obvious reasons. Listen, I think we're going to do this again pretty frequently. Why not? You know, we got nothing else to do right now. We don't have games to cover. So we'll talk to each other. We'll talk some baseball. We'll get some updates for people on what's going on and maybe react to some of the different things that are happening in our sport and with our teams as we all kind of get through this. This is our first one, and let's just kind of do this every once in a while and see where it takes us. Hope fans at home are getting by and getting through with homeschool and the kids and seeing all the funny memes that people are putting out there. Their kids are suspended and the teachers are drinking and things like that, right? All kinds of things out there. But I hope everybody's staying safe. And Eddie, listen, this just comes natural to us, right? We just talk about baseball and talk about movies and stuff like that. So let's do this again.
Yeah, no, we will do it again. And hopefully we're not going to be doing this for a long time for this purpose. Let's put it that way. I would hope that
short
we have a little more structure and some semblance of what's going to be going on in baseball. But until then, until we can patch everything together and get this mosaic together, we'll continue doing it. It's been fun. Thanks, Winnie.
Everybody stay safe.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.